everybody. This is Bart Baggett. Welcome to the April edition of the Silver and Gold Member Tutoring Call. I see we got a couple people on the phone call live and a lot of people listening on the internet. How is everyone today?
Really good.
Thank you. I see that our person in Knoxville has muted themselves. So if you're new to it, you can always hit star mute or star six to mute yourself. Probably not going to need to raise your hand as we're all very intimate group tonight. So how are
Does
you?
That work?
Is it William or Bill?
No, Jesse.
Oh, hi, Kathy.
Jesse.
Jesse, thank you, Jesse.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yeah, sorry. I wasn't speaking clearly.
That's fine. Did you guys upload some handwriting samples, and do you have the page that we're looking at? Because this really is a tutorial more than a lesson, and I would love to chat about what you guys want to talk about.
Absolutely. I've got several things I uploaded.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm going to go to this page here. And so if you go to handwritinguniversity.com/classes, it will bounce you over to the index, and you'll probably have to log in to get to this exact phone call, but you're looking for the April 2015 call. And if you scroll down, and if you can't see it, you can hit refresh. I just made a slight update so that those on the internet can listen in via the website. And then, obviously, we've got some 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it looks like 6 or 7 samples to start with. So let's start with you. Which ones did you upload, and which one did you want to talk about?
Okay. This is Jesse. I loaded the one that – actually, I thought I'd loaded up a bunch of them, but I didn't. I just did the one that says – it's right above where it says mum, or it looks like where they're doing the M's. It's second row from the bottom, the one on the left that says Jade. I wish I didn't
live in South Carolina.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Well, you did a very good job because it's nice and high resolution. It's large. We can read it. It's all superb.
Good. I was trying to because I wanted to. I was curious about some of the stuff on there.
Well, good. Let's talk about it. It's interesting. I was having a business meeting with this guy. Actually, he won Shark Week. He was one of the guys that, I don't know if you guys ever watched that show, but he got funded for his belt business. And, you know, he heard I did handwriting, and he basically wrote like 3 words, all block printing, and then scribbled his name. And so it was not a very impressive analysis. And instead of making him write cursive, I just said a couple of general things and went on to the rest of the conversation. But you've got a lot of cursive handwriting here, so you should be able to get a lot of good stuff. Is this somebody you know? Give me a little backstory of why you're interested in this handwriting sample.
Okay. And we are talking about the one that's in South Carolina, right?
Yeah. So if you guys are looking at the page,
okay.
we're on the April page. It's a white piece of paper that says Jade. And it's in very clear.
Right.
If you double-click on that, it's very large. So, because we had some people just join us on the phone call, and I want them to keep up with it.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, Jade is actually my stepdaughter.
Okay.
And when she heard that I was studying, trying to learn more about handwriting analysis, she said, I'm going to send you a bunch of samples from different times, and I'm just going to write things that I'm thinking of for the day. And she said, I have this really strange write printing type thing. And I said, okay, we'll send it. And when she sent it, a lot of what I came up with using, I was using the version 3 of the basic primary trait reference that's in the level 2 part of the 201. And I was using that as the basis of a lot of doing the stroke thing, because I'm not really sure about stacking traits and stuff. But she really liked that. But there were some things on hers that I was kind of curious about. I noticed that when she made her eyes, that she slanted them. A lot of them look like they're slanted, the FA slant. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant.
Great. That's a great question. So let me take one thing at a time.
Okay.
So first of all, using the 201 primary trait dictionary is a very, very good thing to do. A lot of people, in fact, I noticed that even our shipping facility wasn't always shipping the 201 dictionary with the home study course. And so that is definitely part of it. And so although the 201 is online and interactive, that PDF file is the most current one. So for me, when we get ready to give our testing, that to me is the most current trait dictionary of all our materials. So a lot of people use like the back of Walker's book, but that is a very, very good dictionary. And so that's exactly the perfect place to go just to memorize the traits and to have a quick reference index. Obviously, with four sentences, you're not going to get the depth of meaning. So that's a great place to start with. So if you start with the trait dictionary, I think there's almost 85 different traits in that dictionary.
Right.
Maybe there's 77, but there's 85 online, and maybe up to 99 on the online version. But those are primary, so that's good. If you do that, you'll be a very good analyst. And the only challenge is, and you mentioned it and referenced the trait stacking, that is not something that I expect you to master anytime soon. In fact, you can probably make a 80-85% on your final exam if you don't do any trait stacking. So I don't really expect you to do that. It comes very naturally for me, but I've been doing this for 30 years. The only aspect of trait stacking that really is required to pass your test is you have to juxtapose slants with anything else. So if it's an FA slant or AB slant, you definitely want to take that and kind of stack something to it. And the reason that's relevant is because part of the final exam, and I think the most pragmatic use of this, is to understand how somebody works in a job profile or maybe in a relationship. And so slant is so critical to how they help people communicate, and all of you will kind of become the local counselor to your friends once you understand this. And so that ability to put slant with slant, or, you know, an AB writer man with an SA, you know, a D plus writer woman, that's kind of stacking together a few different people compatibility. So don't stress that you can't stack them perfectly. The best I could do is suggest that you listen to sort of the deep cuts of some of the old certification courses, some of the MP3s, and listen to the way we word those over and over and over, because you'll hear me say things like, well, you know, you're adding sarcasm to somebody who already has aggressiveness and they're an E-plus writer, so obviously that person is more temperamental. And you'll hear those, and that'll be, and you go, oh, that makes total sense. And then when you come to, like, memorize it, you get stuck. And I felt the same way for years, quite frankly. I did. I felt overwhelmed. And even when we put together our mastery course and that dictionary, I don't use the advanced traits in the mastery course very often because you just don't see them very much. But what you do use is the primary traits, and if you see a cluster of really negative traits, you know, intuitively you know if someone has a stinger and they have resentment and they got heavy handwriting and they cross everything out, like, you intuitively know that person's not very pleasant. And so, you know, I'm not saying intuitive as far as like a psychic ability, but if you see all that together, you know, your brain's going to go, wow, that's a lot of negative stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so the same thing with Jade. I see a lot of positive stuff, but let me reference the one thing that you did that I want to correct you, because this is incredibly common, and this isn't a perfect example of how we make that mistake, but you will see people, and including Jade, make downstrokes. They go from right or from left to right, and so it's sort of tilting as if sort of the stroke was blowing in the wind, and so it's moving to the right, which is basically to the right of the paper. And so our eye looks at that, and it looks like an FA slant because that capital I looks like it's leaning backwards. But let me ask you, which direction was that? Was that top to bottom or bottom to top? How did she draw that eye?
I don't know. I'd have to ask her how she does that one. I really don't
know. I'm going to make an educated guess. It's a downstroke.
Okay. It looks like it would be. Yeah. I can't see her making that.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody push the pen, especially if they're right-handed. It's almost always a downstroke if they're right-handed. So if that's a downstroke, what is the rule about measuring slant? Is it upstrokes or downstrokes or both?
Upstroke, sorry. Yeah.
So that's the thing. Yeah. If that was an upstroke going backwards, we would have some FA stuff going on there, which would be interesting. Yeah. But we don't have that. Now, I'm not saying she doesn't have some AB qualities, because if you look at the rest of her slant, there's definitely some AB slant within the D's and maybe the W's, even the word while. we probably have a very good AB, maybe some DE, some BE slant going on there, but you don't have the FA because that's not a downstroke.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I've totally forgotten about it. Being
But I got to tell you, there's seven other people that are so glad you did that because that's a great distinction that a lot of people forget about. And if
okay,
you see,
you should be happy.
Yeah, if you see somebody that prints all the time and they've got all those downstrokes going to the right, you know, your brain goes, oh, that's an FA rider, when in fact it's all downstrokes, it's all block printing, and it actually is moving to the right of the page. And so you'd almost be dead wrong just because you forgot that one little thing which says, you know, for emotional outlay and that piece of the puzzle, we can only do upstrokes. And so that's a really critical piece, and luckily Walker drilled that into my head very, very well.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that.
Very good. Now, let's get to some more of those. No, but I want to welcome Kamlesh from Mumbai, India. We've got Jim from Minneapolis. We've got somebody from Kansas. And I'm sorry, I can't read your name on the secret spy software, but we're really glad you're here, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning, Bart.
Thank you for being here. So we're back to Jade. Let's talk about anything else. So I want you to do the analysis, and I'm going to help sort of craft and maybe get you some better words. So what else would you pick up from this handwriting of your, is it your niece, your daughter? What was the relationship?
Stepdaughter.
Stepdaughter, okay. And how old is she? She is 17, 18?
Oh, no, she's in her 40s.
In her 40s, okay, great. So good thing you can't tell age. That's why we don't do that, because we're so wrong. Oh, she doesn't have a child. You sound so youthful, I assume that your daughter must also be youthful.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay, there's on her F, she makes her F two different ways. Like if she's doing of, I noticed she's coming down. She's got like a stroke that goes backwards and down. And I didn't know where that fit in. So that's another question before I analyze what I think is going on with her.
Okay, so let's take a look at that. So there's a couple of F's. We look at the third sentence down. We have don't care much many of the people. There's an OF there. And then in the middle of the page, we've got the rest of North Carolina, and then if I were younger. All those are F's that kind of come back and down. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
If I were younger. I didn't know what that meant.
Well, here's the good news. There's no primary trait that relates to that stroke.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of those things that we don't have a primary stroke. It's not in the advanced dictionary, by the way. So right off the bat, we don't have a primary stroke to know exactly what it is. So you're very good by not recognizing that because it doesn't exist. In fact, I can't remember the last time I saw that, to be quite candid. So then we go into the sort of research zone, or you speculate. Based on other similar traits, it might or might not mean something. One of the ways that we deal with the letter F is the letter F has something to do with organizational ability. And so the textbooks generally say wherever the F crosses, that is a litmus test of how organized they are. And that is based on if it's dead center, the person is very organized, even if there's no loop on top and there's a loop on bottom. So in this case, we see that it's not dead center. It's a little bit lower. So that doesn't really ring true to me for like, oh, my God, that's really organized. So I'm just going to kind of go, that didn't help me much. The second piece is sometimes the Fs have to do with thinking versus physical. So the lower lobes are physical, and that has to do with the organizational, the conversation around the organized F. So there's more physical of getting things done versus planning. That's kind of interesting. You know, I guess that's – I don't like being too ambiguous. So to me, that doesn't jump out. And then the last thing we might look at is the fact that that does come down. And so that reminds me a little bit of the fear of success. And so
yeah,
I would say, huh.
Just the opposite direction.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of a stroke, but the fear of success is on a Y. So then I'm going to go look at the rest of the handwriting to see if anywhere in the Ys and Gs we have a fear of success. So it's sort of an indicator, but it's not the primary trait. So we don't want to go quick to judgment. And then I'm looking at her Ys and her Gs, and I don't see any fear of success in her Ys or Gs. Do you?
No, I don't.
So I just went through my little mental index, just went through five or six scenarios, which means, okay, it might be like this. Let's go test it. And so I'm coming up with nothing particularly profound about that. And I'll be glad to listen to any other opinions, because maybe you've read a book or something, and I'm totally open to learning new traits. It's been my experience that if you don't see it, you know, 12, 18, 20 times, and then confirm it with people, it's probably in the speculative area. So I'm going to open the phones. Anybody else have any reference point to what that might be? Your voice and your opinion is now welcome. So, Jesse, I guess you're on the same page with me. We have no idea.
Okay. All right. Okay. And now another thing on the writing that I thought was interesting is, and this is something I told her, like her T's tend to be, if it's a single T, the T's are crossed fairly low. And she does let people, she doesn't have enough opinion of herself. She gets taken advantage of a lot. And I told her she needs to increase her self-worth or more value for herself, because she's got a lot going for herself.
And how did she respond to that?
Oh, she was quite in agreement with that, because she said she'd been at the same job for a lot of years, like 16 years, with a boss that she really didn't respect. And I said, change jobs. You've got the skills. Change jobs. And she finally did change jobs, and everybody was saying, it's about time. she is very organized. So I didn't tell her. I mean, I said she was, I was doing something with her thinking and stuff that I had told her about. But I didn't say that she was organized, because I wasn't sure with F's, because her F's don't have the double loops on it. So I wasn't sure on that one. So I'm glad to hear you talk about that, where it crosses.
Yeah, where it crosses is normally what it is. So one thing we didn't do is just kind of give an overall generalization. The fact that she writes with a fairly large middle zone, you know, that's going to be indicative of someone that's really friendly. And she's got this slant, which is somewhere between B, C, and C, D. But one of the mistakes a lot of people have noticed, at least in the final exams recently, is they confuse the slant with social aptitude. And social aptitude is how friendly people are and how well they engage. And one of the confusions about self-esteem is people think that self-esteem relates to how friendly people are, how comfortable. Because Jade, if you look at her first name in the J, she's got a lot of self-confidence with social things. So when she walks into rooms, she interacts with people, I think she's super friendly, and I think she can come off as feeling confident in certain areas, especially socially. But that doesn't mean she's going to make changes, and she's going to look in the mirror and think she's pretty, and that doesn't mean she's not going to stay in a job 16 years. That has to do with esteem. And so that's a great distinction that a lot of people really don't understand, because the habit is, when you're memorizing these primary traits, you look at the T-bar, and I would agree that it's low in almost every place. The only exception, and I want to point this out to you, because this is one of the things you might have missed on the CDs, is that in the word North and the word Wooten, which is her last name, she connects the T to the next letter. And when we see that, that indicates fluidity, which is a great trait. Mm-hmm. It's one of the traits of intelligence. And fluidity is a super trait, which helps everybody appear smarter and actually have make better decisions. So if we see the T low in that area, you have to discount it and say, okay, the trait of fluidity is so important that we're not going to count that against her in self-image. So then you've got to go look at the other T's, and when we do, we find that they're almost consistently in the middle zone. So coast, west, west, don't, look at the don't in the top two lines. So you're absolutely correct that her ability to make change and a fear of failure are at the core of her personality. Yet, remember that socially she's friendly, and because her J is big, then people think she's got some social self-confidence, but it doesn't translate to self-esteem. And those two distinctions are super important, Because if you just say, oh, she's a wallflower, she's not confident, that's not true. Because wallflower has to do with social extroversion, not self-esteem.
Yeah, she was an office manager in a doctor's office, and she was like the receptionist office manager. So I mean, she dealt with people very well,
which makes sense for me because she's got basically big middle zone, very open O's and A's. She's basically has some feminine writing to her, like she's not super analytical, but she's not super cumulative. All that typically is people that are really good with interacting to social environments. People that have too much angles in their handwriting, they can be harsh and they can be judgmental. Like think of the German writing and the Hitlers and the Einsteins. And then people that are too fluffy don't have the skill set to manage. So she's right there in the middle. And that T-bar is right on the money. So you did really good with her saying that, hey, your self-esteem is your area. You can raise your T-bar. You can try and change your job. And it has to go back to that fear of failure. So that's a very good observation on your part.
Yeah. I also noticed she had, thank you, Bella. It looked like some stingers to me with her C's. And she has had some pretty harsh issues with nails in her past.
Let me see. Stinger, stinger, stinger. Show me the letter, because I see the C in Carolina that has an odd loop.
Yeah. Yeah, the Carolina, and most of it's her C's. Like, I don't, on the third line, I don't care for many of, you know, the C in care. But she doesn't do it on the next line where they got could. But the line below that, Colorado.
Yeah, I'm not seeing a typical stinger. I mean, the one in North Carolina is definitely a loop. And I also don't see any resentment. I see it as out of choir, which, of course, could be security. So I'm not jumping at stinger. So that doesn't mean she didn't have a bad relationship, but I don't think she's holding on to resentment. Do you know her relationship with her mother or father? Because those are all capitalized versus a cursify, which means that she may have pushed her parents away. Do you know her relationship? Well, you are her mom, right?
No, I'm her stepmom. Yeah, it was pretty bad with both of them, really.
Yeah. And is she in a relationship now?
Oh, yeah. She's been married like 17 years to the same guy. Happily married.
Okay. Yeah, I just don't see the stinger. So I would, and when you see them, they're almost really obvious. Like they'll bounce right down at you because they look like hooks or teeth or something. And so make sure you reread that chapter so you can distinguish them because I don't think she's got a lot of anger. In fact, I think she's a very pleasant individual, and that's always good.
Yeah.
Her biggest problem is her own lack of confidence so that she can change and actually make progress.
Yeah. Well, that was my biggest contribution to her was I said, raise your T-bars. And she said, well, it just doesn't feel normal to me. And I said, I don't care. Raise your T-bars. Try it.
Yeah. And the other thing that will help her is she's sensitive, and I don't think she's too sensitive, but those loops in the D's, you know, that those could get bigger, especially as she goes through change. Because when people change anything about their writing, you know, it doesn't always stay in that letter. And that's one of the cool things that we talk about in the mastery course is when you change one thing, if you don't understand how all the traits stack together, it may come out somewhere else. And when you're counseling people, then you can go, oh, yeah, the T-bars are higher, but now she's more sensitive. So she's still having the sensitivity, so it didn't really change. It just kind of pushed it from one part of the handwriting to the other. That was one of my big takeaways as we were designing that course, is we started seeing how when you change one thing, if you understand how the traits stack together, you could check the other places to make sure that didn't come up. Because, for example, for example, sensitive criticism is always seen in the loop in the D. That's the primary trait. But we all know people that are really sensitive that don't have a loop in the D. And you're thinking, oh, my God, that the handwriting is wrong. But when you start to that next level, you realize that an E-plus writer with a low self-esteem has exactly the same sensitivity to criticism than someone with a loop in the D. And so you realize that they still react that way without that loop. And so that stacking really helps, especially in therapy, because you don't want them, you know, to start slanting their handwriting too much to an E-plus writer if they're normally a CD writer.
Okay, that leads me to a question. I decided to try to change my. I can sometimes I have the D and the T, so I've been really focusing on the D and the T, not having loose in it. And also wanted to change my S to, instead of the typical S, to make it like an S that loops. I don't know how to explain it. Kind of like the E, the cultural E.
Okay.
When I make the cultural E, I tend to start getting loops in all of those. And I make an S, just like a capital S, except like if I'm doing Jesse, it would be J-E, and my S's have loops at the bottom of it. And I'm thinking, I'm getting a lot of loops and stuff. And I'm afraid, I don't want to be screwing myself up.
If you make your Jesse with two printed S's and combine those together, that becomes fluidity, and that's a beautiful trait. So, I mean, I don't have any S's in my name, so I can't speak to how you would do it with your signature. But even in Jade, she has basically printed S's, but they look like figure eights because she just loves to connect one thought to another, and I think that's a really positive trait. So it's interesting you chose S because I've never seen S as part of a graphotherapy assignment, but I don't think you're going to mess anything up with your S. I can't send any horrible trait with an S.
Okay, and one other question, and I'll let you pull up somebody else's. I'm sorry, I'm hogging the show here. The letter F, instead of making it with the loop, I used to make it with like an L, and then you go down, and it's almost like a figure eight. I think you do have that on your sheet.
So, Jesse, what's your question? I'm not following your question.
Okay. The question is it the making an F a different way? And I had read in one book that it could mess you up instead of making an F the traditional way that you learn in school. Mine was figure eight.
Yeah, I don't think you read that in any of our books. The Hannah University books.
Oh no, I know I didn't. I was just asking you.
Yeah, I actually know a woman who I don't respect that says that the inverse F is a sign of dyslexia. So the top F is going to the right, the bottom is going to the left. And I can't think of anything farther from the truth than that ridiculous statement. And I'll tell you how I know this, because I've done 1,500 interviews with some of the best radio hosts in the country. And they constantly have this figure eight shape in every part of their handwriting. Now, not 100% of them, but probably 60 to 70% of these hosts, maybe even 90%, especially of the ones that I could get cursive of, they have backwards F's. And so I think that people with that flipping, beautiful figure eight, like ice skaters, you know, figure eight,
that's a sign
of fluidity, talking, connecting, speaking. Yeah, I know a lot of actors as well. So I think it's a sign of brilliance, and yet this other woman says it's dyslexia. So I would be mindful of when you read weird stuff like that. So I don't think it can mess you up in any way. I think it's a good thing.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I was, I had read that, but, I'm sticking with your stuff. So I just wanted to make sure because you didn't mention that, and I thought, well, did he mention it? Didn't mention it because he didn't want people to try to do that, or what? I just wanted to clarify that. So.
Yeah, generally, here's the way we built the handwriting university curriculum, and I know we've got somebody from India on here, and they have so many handwriting experts in India that are self-taught, and they have so many bizarre traits that just simply aren't true. It's kind of like if you go to the bookstore and get the book that says 800 traits, 700 of those are not true. And so what we did, and I even did this with Dr. Walker and Milton Bunker stuff, is I simply didn't publish anything as a primary trait, which I found to be wishy-washy or not true in every circumstance. Now, especially primary, because I know when you stack stuff, things can be less true or more true because there's something called a weight.
Right.
So, yeah, if it's not mentioned, it means that I saw it and didn't believe it, and that's why it's not in the primary trait dictionary. So it doesn't mean that it couldn't be true in some context, but as far as like looking at one primary letter and saying that means that issue. If it's not in that dictionary, I would bet that there's probably a reason why it's not there, which means it's not actually true. I mean, there's very few traits that comes along, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's a new trait. Like, that just doesn't happen every 5 or 6 years maybe. So if you stumble across something, you're sure welcome to do research. And what I did and how I, you know, is that most of Dr. Walker's stuff is in our material, but we've changed the names over 20 years. We've removed some stuff, and we've refined it because even vocabulary changes over 20 or 30 years with the different cultures.
Okay, great. Last thing, I promise. On the primary trait sheet that get off of your website, the basic primary trait reference index, it's got the age.
The 201?
Yeah, the 201, version 3. Down at the bottom of that first page, it says, used in conjunction with, and one of the things it lists is the shapes and strokes index. Now, is that part of which course? Because I'm in the 201. That's the level I'm on. And I didn't know, is that something that is sold separately? I was just curious on that, because that will do like the individual like strokes and stuff, right? I'm not sure what it is.
Let me just pull it up for you, because I think that might have been printed as part of the 501 course, because we reprinted everything that's 301. But let me just double check it, because I recently updated the 201. Did you download that in the last 30 days or so?
It might have been a little bit before 30 days. I've probably been a couple months ago I did it.
Okay. Yeah, so let me research that, and I'll answer your question in a few minutes. We're not hiding anything, actually. The strokes and shapes actually were like maybe 5 or 6 pages. It wasn't that long. And I can sure make it available for you. It was basically a very short version, because there were certain things that weren't in the primary dictionary that were like fluid strokes that sort of had a gestalt meaning.
Right.
But it definitely wasn't meant to hide something. So let me just double check for that, and I can sure make that available. Here's what I did, and this is my bad. So in the 501, which is the mastery course, we reprinted this, which has got the same stuff in it, and then I said to use in conjunction with these other two pieces. So you wouldn't have the shapes and strokes and the advanced trait stacking index. So that's my bad. So I basically put the 3.0 version. It's kind of like a bonus. I don't know that that's revised a whole lot from the 201, but essentially what that was designed is, because in the 501, we're taking people through the primary to remind them, and then we're adding the advanced traits. And so instead of combining those two, there's two different dictionaries. And so that's basically what that is. So I must have uploaded the most current one, which is good for you because you got the most current primary one. But it's a little bit of a sneaky tease, because you don't have those other two pieces of information.
Okay.
And that wasn't intentional. I promise you that wasn't intentional. And thank you for that.
Sure.
But the good news is that's the most current index, which means that any mistakes we had in the previous one's not there.
Okay, great.
Speaking of, we're having this huge sale on the deluxe course. So if you want the advanced course.
Yeah, for the birthday boy. You're going to have a birthday.
Yeah. But you already have the home study course. But if you want like just the carve out the mastery course, I'm sure Christine will work something out for you, and that would be awesome.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And
it is my birthday. It's Thursday.
Yeah.
And I'm 29 again.
Right. Remember, I'm the old one in the class, so I know what people are not telling.
Yes. All right. So let me ask our friend from India. Is it Kamlesh from Mumbai? Is that who's
on
the phone?
Yes, this is Kamlesh from Mumbai.
Hi, how are you, my friend? Do you have any questions
for us? I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad you got up early. It's 6 o'clock in India, right?
Yeah, I have a college to attend. I mean, I have a lecture, so I have to get up early.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being there, and I'm glad you're a member. Is there any questions you have or any stories you want to share about how big everything else is in India?
I have a question related to primary traits, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah, there's an image put up at the bottom, if you can see, about M's, different types of M's.
Yes, sir. Good graph you made. This makes it very easy.
So I was going through these primary traits, and one thing that came into my mind was this the upper zone, I mean the humps of the ends penetrating the upper zone, and that's what you call it investigative thinking, right?
Yeah, basically that's true, because they're investigating into the philosophical area.
Okay.
But I, honestly, I'll tell you, I don't use that distinction much in my own life. Normally, I take fluidity and the speed of the writing along with the points to determine how fast the thinker is. And so you're technically correct. And so if we're giving you a test, that would be the distinction, is if that goes into the upper zone. But between you and me, normally it's the shape of the top hump and the shape of the bottom hump. That's going to kind of dictate what category that falls into.
Okay. So now if I look at the first one, the cumulative hump going, penetrating the upper zone, would that be included in the investigative thinking?
Investigative would be...
Out of those five, would be which ones?
Well, remember, investigative is a weird word, because the areas that we focus on the M's are whether that they are analytical, and that's at the baseline. So your number three, four, and five would be analytical, because analyzing and dissecting information. Your number one would be more cumulative learner than all of them, because they're so procedural. And so I don't think that would qualify as an investigative or analytical, and definitely not comprehensive.
Okay. So if it is the inverted V-shape, if the humps of the M are inverted V-shape, is it going to be V-shape only to qualify for the investigative?
It really has to be sharp points. Think about angles. And so this goes back to some Gestalt theory. If you look at your number four, it looks like a jigsaw, you know, very, very like two pyramids, correct?
Yep.
So that's very, very angular, very sharp. That would cut something. If that was metal, that would cut. And so the sharper the angles are, the more probing, the more angry, the more curious, the more argumentative. I mean, essentially, that's the same stroke as we see in a stubborn T-bar, right?
Right.
So those individuals are going to be that kind of thinker, but instead of physically being aggressive or mentally, they're just going to sort of always analyze and calculate. So all your engineers, your computer programmers, your people that aren't necessarily very social, but they're very smart, they have this constant analytical ability. And so when you think about investigative, it's just about analytical with a little bit of a tendency to go in the upper zone. And so number four would be both analytical, would be both fast thinking, and it just doesn't quite meet that definition of comprehensive. Your number two kind of meets comprehensive, but it's more rounded. And so you really don't have an example of someone that's both speedy thinker with angles at the baseline and comprehensive. But number two would be kind of comprehensive, but those baseline arcs, that becomes a more feminine, supportive nature. And you'll see a lot of very supportive team players that have baselines that are wavy or at least look like a bowl, and they're much easier to get along with in a group. And so I call them feminine handwriting. It doesn't necessarily mean male or female gender, but they have much more yin and yang energy.
Okay. And if you also notice, the second one, the second M, doesn't penetrate the middle zone. I mean, doesn't penetrate the upper zone. So that also doesn't qualify for the investigative thinking.
Yeah, but again, I want you to stop focusing on the upper lower zone, because I don't put a lot of weight on that. And I know that Dr. Walker's book talks about that, and I know that's maybe on the test. But it's really not near as important as the speed and the connectors and the basically shape of those M's. If they're consistently well-formed, they're mature, they're executed with speed, it's probably going to be an intelligent, well-adjusted person. If they write like they're semi-retarded, that's a slow, unfortunately not very bright individual. So whether or not it's the upper or lower zone, I think that I wouldn't spend much time focusing on that feature. Put more effort into the actual fluidity and the speed and the execution.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, and that's probably one of those traits, like we were talking about earlier, I've eliminated most of the traits. That's one of those traits that's kind of on the bubble, as a racing term, is we just don't use it that often. It's probably still technically true, but it's not something I lean on a regular basis. So I'm really glad you clarified that, because I want you not to worry about it and focus on the other things, because they're much more important.
Okay, good. I read it in your book, Success Secrets of Rich and Happy. So the thinking pattern topic had this thing. The tops of the letters which penetrate the upper zone kind of qualifies for the investigative thing. So that got me curious. I wanted to know about it. So I came up with these pictures of different M's.
Good. I think I understood about half that. The guy, did you catch all that? Because my Indian ear is not as polished as it is when I'm traveling over there. So Kamlesh, the rest of the people on the phone didn't understand any of that. Can you repeat that with a little bit more of an American accent for us?
American accent, okay. Let me try. Okay, I was going through your book, The Success Secrets of Rich and Happiness. Okay, and this had this topic, the thinking patterns and intelligence. I came across this statement which says the tops of the letters of M, N or H, when they penetrate the upper zone.
Yes.
That's where you qualify for the investigative thinking. And the more it penetrates the upper zone, the higher is the probing, higher is the investigation.
Great, I understand. So I think morally we're talking about just handwriting in general versus just the M's or N's, because when people, their H's and their high stems, when they go in the upper zone, people tend to be more philosophical, they're more mature, they make better decisions generally. Even the first sample of handwriting we see, very beautiful handwriting on the page here, but a lot of high loops and low loops. And so that's basically a mature writer. And the opposite of that is someone that doesn't have any upper or lower loops. So you get that big bubbly handwriting, they never penetrate the upper zone. So I'm going to reread that chapter just to make sure that I wrote it correctly. But it has more to do with the stems and not just the shape of the M or the N.
Okay.
And by the way, you did a phenomenal American accent. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to do the rest of the seminar with my Indian accent so you can understand me perfectly. Good?
Yeah.
Jim, how are you in Minnesota?
Can you hear me?
Ah, there you are.
Oh, okay. It worked this time. You usually have trouble with Skype.
Yeah, welcome. Do you have any questions or stories you want to share with us?
Well, I submitted like 3 samples, and I'm curious about the one on the yellow piece of paper.
Awesome. Thank you. And I don't have to call on you guys to interact, so you guys are welcome to jump in and interact. This looks like someone named Barb, B-A-R-B.
Yes.
And so, Jim, do you have a question or do you want me to talk about things I see? What would be the best learning for you in this context?
On this one, well, I know this person, Barb. I knew her for a little while. So I have backstory on it so we can see if the handwriting matches who she is. But I didn't know her well enough to know everything about her.
Okay, so let me give you the couple things that jumped out for me. Is the baselines have a lot of arcades, which makes a feminine individual. So you're probably going to find that she can be lovely in a group and supportive. That's a very good yin and yang as far as the yin trait. The two downsides that I think you would learn if you dated her or really got to know her is her T-bars are slanted down to the right. And that has to do with bossiness, a feeling of not being in control, and then some domineering quality. So although it's not
100%. Yeah, that is true about her.
Yeah, there's 3 of those T-bars that are pushy, domineering, sarcastic. So when she gets defensive, especially when she gets her feelings hurt, you know, she can be, shall I say, a little bit rude, condescending, sit down, shut up, you know, and kind of defensive. Mm-hmm. That's going to be probably her worst quality.
Yeah, she didn't have any problem speaking her mind.
But in a negative way, was she rude about it or just blunt?
I would say blunt and terse. I wouldn't say rude.
Terse. Yeah, terse is a great word. Because she's got secretive, so she's going to try and not offend people. See, when someone's sensitive to criticism, because she's got a pretty good loop in her D in good, and then in weekend. So when they're sensitive, normally they're good about not pissing people off because they're really sensitive. So they normally have some sort of diplomacy. And then she's secretive, so she kind of has a little ability to keep secrets in context. But some of her H's have no loops at all. But again, it's when she gets defensive. And again, she's got basically a DE slant. So she's going to be emotional. She's going to get her feelings hurt. And that's when she gets terse. I think that would be the description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think anything beyond those two red flags are horrible. I don't think she's a horrible person. She's got a good quality. She's a good talker. She might make a good salesperson. She's got good energy. She's direct. There's a lot of pleasant things about her. Like I said, the feminine quality and the teamwork. But for me, the domineering and the loop in the D would be a little bit of a red flag for me if they were in my company or in my life personally, because I want to make sure I wouldn't offend her accidentally.
Right, and some of her O's do have, like, double loops inside them, too. So I never felt like I could quite trust her openly.
Good. I'm not really catching the double O's, but you're right. On lotion, there's a little one there. But in the ID, there's a big left-hand loop. And sometimes left-hand loops are interesting because they're self-deceit. And then when people have loops on the right, it's secretive. And you're going to sometimes feel like you can't trust people that are secretive. Even though they're not lying to you, they're not being transparent. And so I think in relationships, you feel like they're not being totally honest. And trust me, and women on the phone will let you know that not telling you something is just as much of a lie as lying. Isn't that right, ladies?
Right. Lie of omission.
And that is an argument every man and woman have ever had in their whole life. So that I think your feeling was probably because of her secretiveness, not necessarily because of an overt lie. So that might be
a coworker. There wasn't a personal relationship here. It was professional and coworker.
Yeah, so, and the thing about professional relationships is you hardly ever see their really ugly side. That's one of the reason I first wrote a book on relationships, because everybody can put on their game face at work for a little while until the Christmas party and they get drunk, or you start dating them. And then you find out how ugly people can be. And so, unfortunately, we don't always know these. The handwriting shows us way before we ever see in real life. But this woman would definitely be, I think, frustrating in an emergency. I think she would be turned into kind of a brat.
That's a good way to put it.
Jesse, do you have a comment? You had your hand raised.
Yeah. The first word, make, what is that? Is that considered an acquisitiveness on that loop or that hook? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's good. It's a great question. So it is an acquisitiveness hook, and then you have to make the decision whether it's in the middle zone or it's in the upper zone. Which one is it? Do you think it's in the upper zone or you think it's at the baseline? Like the word sheets is definitely at the baseline.
I'd say on make it's in the upper zone.
Yeah, so that means a desire to acquire ideas, education, knowledge, and in most every context, that's a wonderful trait. And many people with that end up telling me they go back to school, they're always reading. So the metaphor for that would be reading, educated, you know, learning documentaries, where someone in the lower zone only, it becomes jewelry and things and security and, you know, more material objects.
Yeah, on the next word, she's got for sure. Make sure that looks like she's got the desire for responsibility in the S, because the loop comes back.
Great. Let me give you a coaching on that word. That is a desire to acquire. A responsibility would be a completely upside down, like an O shape, and there is no desire for responsibility on this page, according to the primary trait definition. So desire to acquire is the word you're looking for, and it's an acquisitive hook. And so you bet. I don't know if, Jim, you know this, but she probably has lots of shoes and a closet full of stuff she doesn't use.
Could be. I don't know.
But we don't know because she wasn't dating her. It was just a business associate.
Mm-hmm.
Good distinction, Jesse. And by the way, I love the fact you're throwing these words out because this is how we go from great to excellent is we get these little bitty words defined, and that's part of the beauty of it because we have like 70 words we have to memorize, and it's really easy to get them confused. And, Jesse, it took me years to make the distinction that I'm giving you now, so I want you to feel good about yourself.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, seriously, I mean, think about it. We have 26 letters in the alphabet. And I'm giving you guys 85 different primary traits to not only memorize, but to make sure that you know when it shows up and when it doesn't. So it's definitely not a simple process to do this. So I think you're doing really well.
Okay. Well, on the desire for responsibility from the basic primary trait sheet, it's got a little sample image. And the very first thing is an S, and it looks like an S that has a big loop in it that goes forward. That's the only reason I said that, and I misread that letter, thinking.
That's an interesting interpretation of that. It didn't occur to me, but I've always seen desire for responsibility as if it's a jealousy loop, but got really large. So almost like an entry loop that started and went west, then north, and then east and then south, like in a big loop. So that's all. Unless I'm completely confusing myself, that's a big jealousy loop is responsibility. Does that sound correct, Jim and the other people on the phone?
Yeah, what you just said sounds right.
Yeah, it's almost clockwise, and it's really large, and it's in the upper zone. And I remember that because Dr. Walker had that loop, and I guess he probably had jealousy, and then he changed it, and he took a bad trait and made it into a good trait. I didn't know him when he had the small loop, and I'm just making that up. That may not be true, but always very interesting that he decided consciously to make that really big responsibility loop because I don't see that much anymore. It's not that common to have that level of ostentatiousness. Good. Jim, do you have any other comments about this young lady that you brought in besides her issue with her father? Do you know anything about that?
Besides her issue with her father? You mean on the yellow page here?
Yeah, the yellow sheet with says it. That is an issue with the dad, and it not only thinks a point, it's like a little bit of a loop. So that's something that I would explore and find out if there was any perceived abuse or at least some dysfunction with her dad. I would investigate that. And it may be, again, we talked about the eye on past courses. It looks like that's the first loop, and then the second one rolls right into the eye. So in that case, it could be the mother, because remember the capital I is sometimes reversed. We don't know. But there's something up with one of her parents, and I would love to explore what that is, but I wouldn't go on record of saying it's mom or dad, and I sure wouldn't go on record saying dad molested her, which other experts would do. I would just say that something that's there, we should explore it and find out, you know, how that shows up in her life.
Yeah, that would be interesting if I could, but she no longer works there, so
yeah.
I probably won't see her anymore. So, but
good. But the reason I give you that is I want you guys to know that I don't have all the answers. You know, there's clues, and there's some things like the eye, which we know is sometimes backwards. So you just turn those into questions. You say, hey, we need to explore that. So if you're working with someone in a therapy session, you wouldn't expect to know everything the first 5 minutes. That's not even realistic. But at least you can get some clues on areas that you need to explore and then dig into those areas. And that's one of the most valuable parts of learning this, especially in a therapeutic context. So I don't want you to know, I don't look at this and just know all the answers. I usually know what I do know, and then I know what I don't know. And both those pieces of information can be very useful in moving forward in some kind of consultation context.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also noticed, too, just knowing her personality, that her K's, like in the make and then weekend at the bottom there, a little bit of a go-to-heck K.
Yep, a little bit there, you bet.
Yeah, it's not huge, but she definitely had that
Yeah, and you know, the D is really large too. Sometimes when you see letters that are just generally large, you look for that defiant. Again, you guys are bringing us pretty normal people today. There's nobody, there's no serial killers in the bunch, you know, nothing ridiculous.
Okay, well, that's good. That means there's not too many to run into.
Yeah, that's good. You know, and that's great, though. I mean, you almost have to go to dysfunctional places like the homeless shelters. You know, when my first book, I bought a homeless guy a burger because I didn't have any crazy people in my book, so I traded him a burger for a handwriting sample, and he was a nut.
Well, sounds
okay.
Like a good trade.
We're almost out of time. I just want to make sure that we can move all these handwriting samples we didn't get to next week. But is there anybody that uploaded something that you definitely have a strong question about? Because I don't want to leave you hanging for another month or 3 weeks.
Well, this is Kansas. Hello.
Hi. What's your first name?
Arlene.
Hi, Darlene. Did you upload something?
It's Arlene from Kansas. But I need to hit something on here so I can be heard?
No, I can hear you just fine.
You're hearing me fine?
Yep.
Yeah, Bart, thank you. Mine is the last one that has all the writing with the on the right.
Is it with the three-hole punch?
Yes, please. Uh-huh.
So it's a brown black background, three hole punch, the right's a little bit torn, and it's a folded piece of paper that's unfolded, right?
Yes, that's
awesome.
Right. Thank you.
This is a good sample.
I definitely needed some help with this, and I really appreciate your help. Those eyes really puzzled me. The eyes of this is a young man, a friend of my daughter's, and I just don't feel like it's a complete eye. And I don't know, I've read some things that said that if it didn't have the lower loop, perhaps the father was missing. Maybe it was just more of a mother-dominated. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, and as I alluded to before, based on my father, who's always a little bit mouthy when he does his analysis, he feels that the bottom loop is always the father.
Right.
Yet I have been 100% wrong on some occasions, and I don't like being wrong. It's not fun. But what's weird is the upper and lower loop in Andrew McNichol's book says that the top loop is the father, the bottom loop is the mother. So
right.
I found this very odd that these two different books could have two different meanings. So my own research basically to rectify these polar opposites. So without even rectifying it, I'll tell you this. There's a lack of a loop. Yet it's still a cursive eye. So one
right.
of the parents is definitely not part of the guy's unconscious mind. That doesn't mean that they're dead or they're gone, but he's shut out completely and he relates more to one parent than the other. In usually probably 70%, that lower loop is the dad, and so it would be a mother-dominated. So that's probably my first educated guess. And to enunciate the eye is that it's normally the first loop and second loop in sequence. In this case, he didn't even make a first loop, so we're not even sure what direction he makes it.
Exactly.
I would probably go with the more textbook approach, which is that the first loop is missing, and so that second loop is that big one. And so it's either the mother or the father, but one of those relationships is really missing. Do you have any information on which parent is not around?
You know, I really don't. I just know that I know he comes from a family of female domination. The females are very dominant, outspoken, critical. So that's why I kind of lean toward that. But I think it is safer, like you say, he has an issue, you know, as far as one or of them not being part of his conscious mind, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. When we talk about the other eye, you know, having crosses and mangles means people are traumatized by it. He doesn't have any trauma. It's just not there.
No.
So usually when I see that their dad died young, their mom died young, they're just not part of their conscious. But it doesn't mean they don't love them, they don't like them. Like, they'll say consciously, oh, yeah, I love my dad, or he's been gone forever. Like, there's no issue there. It's just not there.
Right.
But I think that's the secondary. Some of the things that show up with this writing are very interesting because he's got these really tall D's and T's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means?
Manic, Is that leaning more toward vanity?
Yes.
I know it's pride and dignity, but I thought they were exceptionally high.
Yes, I would say lean toward vanity. And if you look at his signature, that's a D. Is that not a D in that middle letter?
No, I think it's supposed to be an L.
Okay, it is super tall. So here's my take on this. I've had a couple of friends, including a brother, that has vanity as a primary trait. And it is one of the most annoying personality traits that you can live with. It is tough because they're always right. They're accidentally condescending. And they're better than everybody else. And it's kind of one of those traits that makes you want to, like, punch someone in the face.
That's a good way to put it.
and so this young man has that. He also has a self-esteem, which is moderate. But look at the T-bars. They're generally, at least 50% of the time, going down to the right. So now he's arrogant. He's domineering. He's pushy. He knows it all. And he's going to let you know that his ideas are better than yours.
Mm-hmm.
Is this someone that says you're dating your daughter? Is that right?
Oh, no, he's not dating. He's just a friend. She's married, but he's one of the group of friends of hers.
But
the T's also show low self-esteem. I mean, if I went through here and counted how low some of these are.
Let me make a coaching comment on that. Most of those are above the middle zone. Because his middle zone is so small, and because his stems are so tall, his self-image is actually medium. It's right in the middle.
His self-image
is not low. First of all, he would argue with you because he can't be wrong and embarrassed in public, so he's going to argue with you anyway. But I would not say his self-esteem is low. I'd say his self-image is moderate, but because he's arrogant, people will think he's got a high self-esteem. Because the signature is so big, they'll think he's really confident. But he's absolutely compensating for self-doubt and for the insecurity that comes along with being vain. And vanity is confusing because if you think about the symptoms of vanity, it's that whole narcissist looking in the mirror, I'm so great. You know, the average person would say, well, that person is not low self-esteem. They love themselves. Well, they really don't love themselves. They're really filling an empty space inside themselves by getting validation and by telling themselves they're good. I think if you use the phrase low self-esteem, you'd be inaccurate. And then also, let's not overlook the fact that when people are motivated by pride and dignity, like vanity, they sometimes overachieve because they're so motivated by validation from other people.
Okay.
So he might end up overachieving and doing really great things from a place of a little bit of insecurity. But I do not think he's going to stay in a bad situation too long. I do not think he's going to get pushed around. You know, he's got that bossiness. So, you know, there's some good qualities there, including some of his M's and N's, which might show a spark of intelligence. And then he's got optimism.
Like comprehensive? You mean like comprehensive learner?
Yeah, in the word Makita, which is the third line on the bottom, it says from Harpy to Makita. Those are very sharp M's and N's. I'm just not convinced of his intelligence because he writes so tiny. I can't really know if it's super analytical, if it's kind of muddy. It's a little bit muddled as far as the M's and N's. But I think I'd probably lean to the side of intelligence. And with the small thinking, it's going to be a little bit unpredictable of where you're going to get his emotional spice, because small writers also have features of introverts, and that's not necessarily someone that communicates as clearly.
Yeah. Now, I did have another question, Bart, if that's okay.
Absolutely. I'm here for you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The sixth line down, in particular that H at the end of that line, I remember he... That H, is that a funny-looking H? It really looks abnormal.
Yeah, I remember one of the last days I saw. The H is in where? I don't see an H.
Yeah, Now, I have to get a magnifying glass out to look at this.
Yeah, but let me point out something while you're looking for that, because I'm not seeing the H. Is that I remember one. Look at the O-N-E. Does anybody recognize what that entry stroke might mean?
Where at?
Resentment.
In the O-N-E. I remember one of the last days, O-N-E.
Resentment, maybe?
Yes. And if you look at the on stop light on the left, if you look at the H, remember he used, those are all very similar to resentment strokes. And the word dad underneath that word, that's a resentment stroke that leads into a stinger. If you look at the D underneath that, that looks like a stinger.
Yeah, I found stingers.
Yeah, the O in they would, that looks like either a stinger or some kind of manipulative O. So that goes back to some really negative stuff. Because when people have vanity, that's just one thing. But now if they resent everything, then they're going to go find things to be mad about. So that resentment is going to be a real issue with the stinger. So I definitely wouldn't want anyone I cared about dating this person, because resentment is the one trait that will muddy any water. Even the sweetest, sweetest girl in the world will end up being angry and temperamental if she's in a relationship with this individual.
Okay. Well, he is married.
And bless her heart, how is she tolerating it?
I don't know. I don't know them that well. That's part of the problem here too. But did you catch that H then? Did you notice which H I'm talking about? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The sixth line down, and it's at the end of that sentence. I remember he.
Yes. Yes. So that would be, even though the line's not perfectly straight, there's no loop. So it's a resentment at religion. And since there's no loop, there's no open-minded. So it's an anger at religion. Kurt Baggett would say, you didn't believe everything they taught you in Sunday school, and you would find some unhappiness with religion. But he's very, very closed-minded about religion and philosophy.
Yeah. Are you referring to the closed ease in that? For that?
Well, I just scanned down the page and looked for the other H's, because not all of them have that sort of angle. But all of them tend to be retraced, and they're very tall. So he's arrogant about his religion, and he's made up his mind. So you're not going to convince him to join your cult, because his cult is better.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so I'm trying to find positive things in here. I mean, he wanted me to analyze his writing, and I'm really having a lot of difficulty in finding positive things or how to – I want to be truthful, but I would not like him to – I'm really sensitive to someone feeling so bad about an analysis.
Well, he's got an optimistic slant.
Yeah, okay.
So there's one.
Okay. Well, the thing is, everything we discussed, and I encourage you to listen to this recording again, because it'll be live as soon as we end. And your analysis started right at the top of the hour. So basically, right. Just fast forward. And then think about this. Everything I said it in with a negative perspective, because I, you know, think my brother's kind of a jerk. But those same qualities can be reframed as something really positive. And I'll give you an example. Pride and dignity. That means people take great pride in how they dress, they great pride in their credit score, and they tend to know a lot of things because they're actually pretty smart, because he's pretty smart. You know, the downside is he can be critical of others. So you can take almost any trait and look at and write a phrase of positive things and write a phrase of negative things. And it's just a choice. And so one of the ways that I get myself in the framework of being compassionate opposed to critical when I'm dealing with individuals is I always say, what had to happen in their past to make them have this trait right now?
Right.
And in this case, I would say, wow, obviously the relationship with his mother or father wasn't good. You know, he's very angry. He must have been criticized because now he's ultra critical. And so you start with empathy, and you realize that, you know, he cares what people think about him. He cares about his reputation. He really wants to prove to the world that he's worthy. And guess what? He's wicked smart. He's got a great analytical mind. He obviously finds flaws in other people's religion. Those are all very interesting things. I mean, if this guy was a writer, or, you know, Huffington Post, he would be very witty and probably write some really interesting things. So it's really just a matter of taking those things and looking for the positive in every one of those traits, because there's positive in everything I say.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, even the stinger. You can say, look, you know what? You really like challenging women. I got to tell you, you know, it's really funny. If a girl's not very challenging, if she just comes and throws herself at you, you're not interested. I mean, that's a funny way to say you got issues with women.
Yeah. No, that's right. But now on the F, that you see through here, I read that if they were balanced, the top and the bottom were balanced as far as their shape, that indicated an organizational ability. Would that be a positive thing then?
Yeah, that'd be very positive. And let me just add a distinction. It tends to be where the bar crosses. So the top loop could be really big and the bottom loop could be very skinny, but if the loops are equidistant and symmetrical, that's organized. But obviously, if the both loops are the same and it's equidistant, the person's super organized. But you can also always look at the baseline. Sometimes the baseline will give you a clue of being organized. In this case, it doesn't really give me a clue either way. But usually people with a lot of pride have at least the ability to keep things tidy.
Okay. Now the fact that you see a lot of mistakes and retracing, it seems to be like another negative thing.
No, it's not really. I mean, I would go back to the pride and dignity. He wants people to think that he's smart. So if you make a mistake and cross it out, you're like, I want to make things perfect. So that's not a textbook trait, but when people erase things, it means, you know what, I'm not satisfied with a misspelling. I'm going to fix it, and then I'm going to move forward. So I don't think that's a really negative trait. You know, some people use whiteout and erasers. I just scratch it out because I like to spell correctly, even though that my brain doesn't always follow along with me.
Okay, and you notice the I about the middle of the page? That was really different. But I only saw one of those, and maybe that was another mistake he was trying to cross out. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like maybe an anomaly. And, again, if it's not duplicated, I would always just kind of cross it out. But I think his biggest issues are these O's and E's. He got these really weird O's and stingerish traits. So his relationship with the truth is subjective, that's for sure.
Okay, so another way of putting that is?
Is that if you get confronted with people wanting you to tell your secrets, you know, you don't feel like that they can handle being that they can handle you being really authentic, because they're going to judge you. So it's not out of your wheelhouse to keep things from certain people, because they're not going to handle you. They don't understand you. So, you know, you may not lie to their face, but I wouldn't be surprised if you kept things from people. That's how you phrase that.
Okay. That's
lying is a defense mechanism. They are afraid of confrontation because in the past, confrontation has caused them pain. And so I have a lot of empathy for people that lie, because if they're in a household with a drunk stepfather that beats them up if they get a B on the report card, I would lie and say I got an A, or I'd lie and say I lost my report card. So that's a defense mechanism from being authentic. And so if you phrase it that way, say, you know what, yeah, it's a lot of negative people in your life, and you couldn't be authentic with everyone because they judged you. And that habit has remained, even though, you know, you're an adult and you don't have to be that way.
Okay. I like that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised at how many people you call liars, and they'll tell you, you're damn straight I lie, because they don't deserve the truth, or they laugh. Or they're like, they know. Like, you think you're calling them something bad, but they know it's true. And I'm always shocked at the level of respect I get by calling them out on the fact that, you know what, not everyone deserves the truth. You know, this is not a world where you have to be authentic. And it's very, very interesting how people respond very positive that way. So don't be afraid to tell them the truth, because all you can do is all they can say, what you really end up doing is impressing the hell out of them. Because they hide this stuff from the rest of the world. If you're too vanilla and you make everything sound good, they're not really going to be overly impressed. But again, if you just come with a sense of compassion, you're not going to come off as judgmental. You come off with compassion, saying, you know what, I don't know what caused you to be this way, But you really, really want approval, and you want to prove to the world you're good enough. And some people, that's a great trait to achievement. And you talk about the people like, Richard Branson or somebody else that had this great pride. And then, yeah, I'm like Richard Branson. Yeah, I'm like Michael Jordan. Yes, but that's his best quality and it's his worst. Michael Jordan had a big loop in his teeth. But you don't want to make that.
Right. Now, just one more thing, if I could, please.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, please.
Go ahead. Okay, on the first three lines, the when, the most, and walking right down the middle, when he said, when living in Harper, when, do you see the little, I think it's acquisition in the front there, and also I remember most, there's a little hook there, and everyone was within walking. There's a little. Is that the acquisition, the desire for acquisition, even though it's small?
Yes, it's a desire for acquisition, even though it's small.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Good. That was a great handwriting sample. I love when you guys interact. You make my life so much easier when you upload samples. I really sincerely appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your feedback. How to say something nicely. Have you ever worried that you might have made an analysis and the person went off and shot themselves? Or
no, I definitely have been in a social situation where I've probably been rude, and I'm much better now that I'm older, and I use compassion because it's easy to get caught up in being playful and funny. But no, I mean, if somebody is suicidal or they're really, really an issue, you almost know that and you pull back all the critical things. Like I've literally looked and said, sorry, I can't see anything in your handwriting. I just, you don't really match the criteria, but, who's next? And I'll just skip them completely. And that's because there's nothing good to say. But I'm to the point now, I don't do much free analysis in parties. I mean, as some of my best friends know, and I'll say, look, you know what? I'm not a party gimmick. I get a lot of money for this. So I'll do this for you because you're my friend's friend. But can I just come over here one-on-one with you? Because I don't want other people hearing this. And what that does is that shows you respect them. And it gives you the opportunity to say, look, I didn't want to say this in front of other people, but your handwriting says blah, blah, blah. Now, this may not be true, but I didn't want to say it in front of other people. And I understand that if you have messed up parents and if you're in a relationship right now, but I just wanted to say privately because I didn't want to disrespect you. And they will absolutely be your friend for life if you treat them with respect like that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you.
Yeah, and the other thing it does, it gets you away from the other people, and then they may forget when you come back. Because then they realize you're not entertaining everybody, and they'll move on to something else. It's hard to do an entertainment with more than a couple of people until you start repeating yourself. And it's not that good. And you just don't want to embarrass people. That's not going to be fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Good. And thank you for staying late. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this other handwriting sample, the white one, and the card. I'm going to push them over to next month. And if you have those cards or you upload them, please come back or even make comments. But we'll make sure we analyze them next time. And if they are your handwriting samples, it means that you didn't speak up and push your way into the conversation, and you need to be more bold. I promise you that'll get you what you want because there's a lot of silence in the first 10 minutes. And, Jesse, thank you so much for you did not dominate the conversation. You engaged us all. And then also Darlene and Jim, you are all awesome. And our friend from India who's now gone to school, he's not with us anymore. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bart, and have a happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much. If I can do anything to help you guys, please send us an email at support@henryuniversity.com. Remember that I haven't announced that we're probably going to have our next certification roundtable in Arizona because our most active authorized distributor is in Tucson. So if you guys are thinking about getting your tests finished, we'll announce that. It may be like in September, but it'll be in Arizona. For those of you in other parts of the country, we'll have another one in India as far as other parts of the world. And then if there's anything I can do to assist you in that we don't have, just let us know. We really do these for you guys. We want you to be certified. We want you to become trainers and kind of make a part-time living at this, if not come on stage with us. So let us know how we can support you, and I'll see you guys sometime in May on the Silver and Gold phone call.
All right. Thank you. Have a great birthday.
Have a great night, and thank you for the happy birthday. I appreciate that.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.